Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast, the official cannabis podcast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Rob Smith, back on the line. How you doing, Rob?
I'm doing great, Jordan. How you doing today? I'm
doing excellent, man. You've got a new product that we're looking to promote. A new project that we're looking to promote. Homegrown Journals. Can you talk just briefly about that? Give out the URL, and then we'll get into today's episode.
Yeah, well, thanks. You just kind of gave that URL away. It's simply homegrownjournals.com. And we're starting a educational podcast where we're looking to interview the best growers of cannabis and document one single grow from beginning to end and put that up online so that the audience can see pictures. But the podcast is going to be an interview with me and candid conversations about just growing and what people do in the grow from beginning to end, much like you and I have had those conversations. And I was a little inspired by what you've done and our conversations. But I really have a passion about talking to growers about, exactly what they do in the grow room. Mm-hmm. And my philosophy has always been that there's, hundreds of ways to grow really great weed, and there's, a couple dozen ways to grow, amazing weed, but maybe there's only, a handful of ways to grow the most amazing cannabis in the world.
The legendary cannabis, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and there's a few people that can pull that type of stuff off, and we want to talk to those people, whether they're growing two plants in their closet or 2,000 plants in a warehouse. You can grow some amazing weed at all different levels. And we just want to talk to those growers so that people can learn from those growers directly.
Yeah, I like that. And I like specifically targeting home growers, which is what we're doing today. Today is Grower Tips Home Grower Edition. So we thought it would be perfect to have Rob on. But yeah, we were talking to somebody wrote in an awesome question about their large scale grow and how they're wrestling with this Dosatron and there's a bunch of products. And it really got me thinking, because he had so many products and he wanted to run it all through a Dosatron, but there's limited chambers and all this stuff. And I'm like, there's so many liberating things about small grows and home grows, being able to use a bunch of products and mix them by hand and experiment and all this stuff. Sometimes large scale takes away from the experience. Let me just say, oftentimes large scale takes away from the enjoyment of the experience. You know what I mean?
I'd say most times I would agree with you there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I mean, there's something really, really liberating about small grows. First of all, your loss, if you lose your whole op, it's not going to be a horrible, it's going to be sad, but it's not going to be a tragedy. You know what I mean?
Right.
No one's relying on you. There's no pressures. There's no deadline. There's a lot of really liberating things about home growing. What's your favorite part of home growers as opposed to professional growing?
I think that the most important thing when it comes to growing your cannabis is spending time with your plants, because everything that you put into that plant, you get back out of it. And I'm not just talking nutrients and light and water.
But you're talking love
and the care that goes into growing that plant.
Yes.
And, recently we actually just moved and shut down our grow. And while we were in that process and finishing up those last couple of harvests, I noticed a huge difference in not just yield, but overall quality of our last couple runs of product as we were transitioning out of that space. Because I just wasn't able to spend the time and put the energy that growing really great medicine and cannabis takes. Mm-hmm. It's the difference of, lollipopping as your plant goes into flower and then doing it again at, day 21, or just doing it at some point in time in those first 21 days, because you're probably only going to get to it once.
That's a good point.
And just missing out on those 2 or 3 hours makes a huge difference in your plant and the way that it goes through flower and the way that it responds to everything else that you do. And then you throw in time losses with nutrients and paying attention to, discoloration in your leaves or growth patterns, and things can get out of control quickly in a medium-sized grow.
Yes.
So, yes. a small grow, like you should, in my opinion, you shouldn't grow more plants than you can give the amount of time that they deserve. It's kind of like kids.
I was just going to say that.
You shouldn't have more kids than you should be able to provide to, you know, by yourself or for yourself.
For them to flourish.
Have more. You know, if you only have, you know, 100 energy points in the course of a day, like, you know,
don't have 101 children.
Right. So your kids are getting less than one energy point. Yeah. So you got to give each plant its time and your energy so that it flourishes and you can really get what that plant is meant to give you, whether that's in smell and flavor with the terpenes or the size of the yield that plant is intended to put out.
So that's what I'm thinking is, what's the fun part of growing and what do real cannabis lovers love about growing? And it's, for one, starting it yourself, growing the plant yourself, using all the different products, all the different stress techniques, experimenting, taking a lot of time and going in deep and trying these different techniques. I think that's what people enjoy, is trying these different techniques. And when you get on to a high scale grow level, suddenly that focus shifts to the bottom line. And that's what Wolfman was saying about that guy with the Dosatron. He's like, listen, a lot of these guys that I know are just running a base nutrient line, maybe a couple supplements as needed, but they're focused more on their bottom line than creating these insane plants. They're just looking to keep the space healthy, get their PPMs up, and just run a baseline because it's all about the bottom line, you know? And it's not the case with home grows.
No. And it really shouldn't be with home growers. I mean, for a home grower, I think it should be, the focus is growing your medicine and growing the cannabis for yourself, and you will truly experience everything that you put into that plant throughout the entire grow cycle while you're nurturing that plant, but then again while you're smoking that plant and consuming it and an edible or whatever way you want.
There's a great satisfaction of consuming something that you made yourself. That is a big part of it. You're right.
Oh man, it's like, you know, it's really nice to go out to a nice dinner and have somebody cook for you at a restaurant. But when you're able to stay at home and slay it in the kitchen and cook an amazing meal, there really is nothing like, you know, sitting down to something that you cooked really well for yourself that tastes amazing.
Totally.
And the same kind of goes with a cannabis plant, because I guess the process is just a lot longer. You know, you put 4 months of your time and effort into that and then you're smoking that. And man, like, even if it doesn't taste good, it tastes great because it's your stuff, you know?
Yes, that is absolutely right. And
but people are like, oh, I grew the best weed. And you're like, well...
No, that's totally true.
You grew the best weed that you could grow at that particular time, and it looks great for yours. But like, and I'm so proud when people show me that first grow, because like that joyful enthusiasm that like they're like, this is what I worked for.
Totally.
And you know, that those first couple grows, I mean, you're never going to get back to that rewarding of an experience, I think.
That's a good way to put it.
First couple of grows come to life.
Yeah, the first big harvest, you know. Yeah, you're right. You'll never forget that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about some strategies here. When it comes to growers, home growers specifically, what are some of the biggest and most common mistakes that you see home growers make?
So I think one that we talked about already is trying to grow too many plants in a smaller space or than time you have to care for them. Space being the most common mistake that I see is, you know, these plants can get unruly pretty quickly at times, especially in that flip. People don't really realize how much a plant can stretch. So if you're trying to put 4 or 5 plants in a small little tent, it might be really great for veg time. But you know, some plants can double and even triple in size depending on the strain during those first couple weeks of flower. And very quickly can you find your plant stretching into the lights and you having to figure out some sort of contraption to tie those down and not allow them to grow everywhere.
Yeah, ceiling height is huge. That's one that is commonly overlooked, I feel. So setting up a grow space, there's often stuff that you don't see, you know, until it's too late.
Yep. I mean, you know, ceiling height, you know, we see a lot of people growing in tents nowadays, and you can't get any more limiting than that 4 or 6 feet, you know, and once you've committed to growing in a tent, it's kind of hard to change that game plan.
Yeah.
You know, once you're in flower. You know, some other common mistakes, Jordan, would be, you know, the whole nutrient thing. There's so many nutrient options out there, and there's so many additives and supplements that you can add. And like you were saying with Wolfman, a lot of commercial growers are going with the base and maybe adding a little bit. You know, but I don't think it needs to be much more complicated than that, even at the home grower level.
Overuse is what you see. Sometimes too many products, and I often see too much dosage because what the manufacturers tell you on the back of the bottle is oftentimes way too much in my experience.
Yeah, especially if you're adding in all of the other supplements that they want you to add in, or you see that an amazing Instagram grower got great roots using this mycorrhiza, and you start tossing that in, but you don't eliminate your first one. So now you're just doubling up on a nutrient that you don't need to, spending more money than you need to, and not going to get any more results than you would have with one or the other.
So you think that people think that it's kind of a misconception that if you buy this product, you will get this boost. And if you buy another product, you're going to get an equal boost in a different way. It's like, maybe you don't need to do it that much. I mean, I like to switch products mid-grow. Don't get me wrong. I like to switch my bloom enhancer, you know, from like Bloombastic to maybe a Rock Resonator or something like that. But I alternate. I only alternate a couple times. I never stack them. And I'm usually pretty conservative when it comes to the dosage.
So can I ask you why you switch them?
I'm kind of the know what to do, not know why to do it guy. I do understand that they're derived from different sources, so it's a kind of a different biological uptake. It's a different like chemical makeup and different plants and different strains, and everything kind of absorbs a little bit differently, much like if you take a supplement, a vitamin D supplement or whatever, or let's just say an iron supplement, as opposed to eating some broccoli or a piece of red meat.
Right. Yep. So, it's always amazes me. And that's why we're starting the other podcast is, because I want to ask those questions of every grower, like what got you to that point of like, oh, in week four, I do this and this.
That's a good point. What got you there?
Switch back to that.
Yeah.
And like for me, it always is like, well, it worked once, and until it stops working, I'm going to keep doing it,
right?
Or until I prove that something else is better.
Yes.
And at a home grow level, you know, if you're growing two or three plants, it's hard to switch over your entire grow to trying something new.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also hard to try something new on just one plant. It takes a little bit more work, you know? So, you know, mixing a different nutrient regimen or whatever is mixing a whole different bottle of water. So it's hard to make that switch in all different aspects. So, I get adding one thing at a time and seeing what it does and seeing the change.
Mm-hmm.
But my advice is if you're adding in something, don't be afraid to take something out and see what changes can happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always about adding more. It's about trying different things.
You know? Yeah, that's a good way to put it for sure. But I like, you want to finish that thought?
Nope, go for it.
So I like, you mentioned it's hard to kind of to try one new thing on one new plant. If I was advising a new home grower, one of the best things you can do is have multiple spaces. Even if you have a small space, split it down the middle to have two small spaces. It can really help you when it comes to split testing, whether it's plant training or you're not going to want to flip at the exact same time, so you need to mess with the light cycles or nutrient regimen or separating the strains, whatever it is, vegging and flowering, mother room, got to go with multiple spaces. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I think the big one is separating strains. Even if you draw, you know, put a piece of duct tape down on the floor in your grow tent. My biggest mistake always was losing track of my plants when I moved them around the room or whatever.
Sure.
You know, if I grew two or three different strains in a room of 12 plants, some strains got different feeding regimens. They just responded differently to
big time
nutrients. You know? One of my biggest ones was I had a critical Kush that I literally couldn't give it enough cow mag throughout the first 5 weeks of flower. It just wanted to take more and more calcium and magnesium and iron. But none of my other plants could handle that, of course. All it takes is one time of putting the wrong nutrient, feeding on the wrong plant.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't pay attention in 24 hours, you really could burn that plant up and really be looking at some hard work of flushing and care of bringing that plant back if that's what you try and do.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like that suggestion of keeping things separated and better than just well labeled. I like the separation on the floor, or even separate spaces if you can.
Yeah, and like you said, the different strains, there's a common grower mistake as well, as and just misconception amongst, you know, the knowledgeable populace and the unknowledgeable populace, is strains are so different. It's like not even the same plant. I would always keep the room separate, because sometimes my OG strains would drink half as much as my, let's just say, my lemon rack or like a Quercle or something.
Right.
I mean, it's a whole different plant. You'll kill this one if you treat it the same as this other plant.
Yep. But you said that those OG strains, they weren't bred to be heavy eaters.
Yeah, clearly. They're finicky little bastards.
But then a lot of people are growing strains only when they can give them those 2,000 PPMs and really crank them up and, push that plant to the absolute limit.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that, but you know, I'm a big believer in plant energy, and you have to do everything perfectly right in order to push that plant to get the biggest yield. And that means, you know, not taking anything away from that plant and letting all of that plant energy go into bud production.
Yeah, and the right bud production, like you said, and the energy disbursement is key.
Right. Yep. One thing I want to talk about today, and we can go right into it, is training and supporting your plants. I'm big on training. We have Atlas Plant Trainer, of course, but I'm also big on supporting plants, because we've all heard the theory of having your fans in your rooms to not only move the air, but to blow on the branches and strengthen mm-hmm. the stalks up.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point in time, even early in the flower, the strongest plants are going to start to sag a little bit with a heavy branch.
Yes.
And as soon as that branch starts to sag, that plant's job is to hold that bud up towards the light. That's where it wants to be. That's where it needs to be in order to achieve the biggest size that it can be. It needs the most light that it can get. And that the weight of the branch is sagging, but the plant is trying to hold it up. So it's really expending a lot of extra energy on that
mm-hmm.
action
mm-hmm.
That it should be going into bud production, but it's going into holding the bud up.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just one way that you as a grower can give your plant some love and allow it to hold on to as much energy that it can, making sure that you're supporting those branches even before they start to sag.
Yes, that's the key. And then you're going to be a race against time. Yeah, you've lost a little bit. That's a good point. And you're already in a race against time, because it's not like they happen one at a time.
Right. So, and as soon as they happen, that means that plant has been struggling for a couple of days to hold that bud up.
Yeah.
And then it dropped and you walk in your room, you're like, oh no, the bud's on the floor. Then you got to bring that back up and tie it up with a stake and tire, whatever you're using. But you've already missed the boat by a couple of days anyways.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Plant energy in the whole, as a grower, I like to talk about is just making sure that you don't take anything away from that plant and allow it to use all of its natural energy towards what you want it to use it towards, and that's bud production and terpenes and resins and all of that great stuff that we're looking for.
And I think the when it comes to bud production, just judging by the number of emails and pictures I receive, you mentioned lollipopping or bottom pruning or shaving legs, whatever you want to call it, removing those lower branches so that the energy is dispersed to those top buds where all the weight is going to be anyways. If you don't remove those lower branches, you're going to have a lot of little popcorn nuggets, and that's just wasted energy, right?
Yeah, yeah. So if you're, you know, just for round numbers, say you're going to get a pound out of that one plant. And, you know, before lollipopping, you have 500 bud sites on there. You know, that works out to each bud is going to be just under a gram a piece. But if you lollipop that or shave the legs, as you said, and focus all of those buds up into the top 100, now those 100 buds are each going to be 4.5 grams, or, you know, for round numbers. So not only does that obviously change the size of the bud, but the long-term effect is a lot less pruning and care for the plant. You don't have to care for 500 buds. You only have to prop up 100.
Right.
The trimming is a lot easier on larger buds.
Oh, for sure. You know? That's definitely true. I would almost say it's exponential, though. I think it has something to do with the other branches and the distance that the energy has to transfer. I mean, I am not a biologist. I'm way out of my means here. But I don't think that it just translates if you took the small buds and stuck them on the top. I think when you get rid of those, you get like exponentially more growth. I mean, I feel in my experience, maybe I'm off base there.
I think it's a catch 22, or
because there's no light penetration down to those buds as well. You're not even getting light down there. So I don't know the ratio there, but it's at least as bad as you're saying, if not worse.
Yeah. Yeah. But on the flip side of that, you know, going back to the plant energy aspect, you know, you see a lot of really large plants indoors. And I always really push growers to stay away from that, because your plant is expending energy to get all of those nutrients up to those top buds, whether it's 2 feet a branch or 6 feet a branch. But it's spending more energy on the 6 foot branch. So I think you bring up some good points that, you know, it's not getting light penetration and airflow down to the bottom. But it's also spending a little more energy getting all of those nutrients and water up to those branches if they're really far away.
Right. And that's why people are into the mainlining and stuff like that. Listeners, you can Google that. It's like the specific way of pruning so that there's no staggered branches. It looks like a candelabra. That's kind of what I tell really beginners when I talk about pruning. You want your plant to look like a candelabra.
Yep. As even as possible is what I say.
And nothing on the bottom.
Yeah. And, you know, mainlining is easily accomplished, or most easily accomplished, with a seedling. But even with a clone, as long as you can keep the plant kind of offset and even in its growth pattern. And that really comes into play with your topping techniques throughout the growth process.
Yes, especially early, like you said.
Right. Yeah. And ensuring you're topping and not thinning or cutting off too much. Because that, you know, you want the plant to grow 2x2 or 2x4 and then by 8, and have nice even tops all the way up around. Another plant energy conservation technique, I guess.
What else do we have on the docket here? Kept everything on my phone instead of my computer, so I'm a little bit too on general rules of thumb. I feel like that was pretty good for the plant energy side of it. And then we're going to skip products. So let's just do the general rules of thumb. So I like to tell growers, like I said, the candelabra is a perfect example. I like to tell growers kind of simple rules of thumb to go by. One of the ones that I say a lot, and it comes up on this show, maybe people are sick of it, but overwatering. I mean, that's just one of the first things I tell first time growers and home growers, is that people really tend to overwater. Have you found that to be true as well?
Yeah. Overwatering. We talked about overfeeding. you know, I think this definitely comes in with less is more. People, you know, if you're giving your plant food and nutrients, then it's got to be taking it up, right? That's the mentality. But it's just as important. And one of my tips is it's, you know, it's just as important to let that soil base dry out so that it establishes a good root base.
Yeah. You want those roots to expand and reach out, exploring for more moisture before you hit them again with it.
Right. So, you know, one thing that I always suggest is grow in the fabric pots, the smart pots.
Those have been coming up a lot on the show. I've never personally tried them, but a lot of people say good things about them.
Yeah. So your roots with the aeration on the fabric pots constantly are going to grow and keep spinning and kind of cycle around there.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of with a hard edge pot, they're going to reach the edge and stop growing.
Right.
So your root system is always kind of in flux with a fabric pot and growing and absorbing more nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
But what I say is, you know, to go along with the not overwatering or overfeeding, is ensure that when you pack your soil in your pot, that soil is firm, almost hard, as you're packing it in, because a plant's roots are going to stretch for water, but only if it has something to stretch through.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't give it enough soil to grow into and stretch through, I've gone over to grows and had a 10-gallon pot, a really wide pot, but only, you know, a 3 or 4 inch diameter ball of roots, because there was not an awful lot of soil. The pot was very airy, and those roots didn't have anything to really stretch through.
Sure.
So the plant didn't have anything to stretch through. So one thing that, I don't know if you knew, but a cannabis plant naturally grows to about 25% larger than its root base.
Sure. So, I think I've heard that before.
Yeah. So if you have a foot across plant, it's going to grow to about 25% larger than that.
Mm-hmm.
But if your root base is only 3 inches inside that, you know, foot wide plant pot, your plant isn't going to grow much bigger than that. And we've all heard the saying, happy roots equal happy fruits, right?
Yeah, totally. And sometimes plants just don't pop, and you look and the roots are all, you know, it's just a tiny little patch, like you said. And there are a lot of things you can do to improve root health, but yeah, it's funny how that works, right? Some go and some don't.
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of additives to the soil and your watering.
Yeah, the mycorrhizae, like you said, and you can do the tap-in roots and a lot of products, but it just seems like, yeah, I've just run into them where it's exactly like you described. You plant, you know, 50 plants in 3-gallon pots, and they all start doing fine and filling up, and all the roots are doing good and they're growing, except for that one guy, and he's just kind of sitting there, and you pull him out and his roots are just a little mini root ball. It's just, I don't know. Yep. Sometimes you get one of those.
Yep. Well, plants are finicky. They're just like people.
Yeah.
Sometimes that happens.
So what's going on with Atlas Plant Trainer? Obviously, everyone needs to go to atlasplanttrainer.com. It's the best support system out there on the market. And use promo code GROWCAST to get 10% off that order and every order for life. Do you have any new developments with that company, Rob? Or are you just chugging along? I know you were featured in High Times. That's exciting.
Yeah, we were in High Times a couple months ago. It was on newsstands in May, but it was the July issue. It's funny how that works in the publication world.
Hmm.
We are actually starting off a new webinar series. We're doing Plant Training Tuesdays.
Oh, that's genius.
We're at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. You can go right to atlasplanttrainer.com/webinars. And we're going to go over the basics of Atlas Plant Trainer and how to apply it into your garden, how to assemble a set, and how to get the most out of the product and see the yield increases that we saw in our garden museum.
That's awesome, man. I love that. Did you ever get around to the ringing, the plant ringing? We had this conversation a while ago and
I did check that out. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I actually had, somebody reach out to me on Instagram, I think, and I forget the name, and I don't want to screw with my phone right now, but they asked me about the plant ringing and if I had gotten to it. I think they were trying it on another, not a cannabis plant.
Yeah, something else.
What it was. I wanted to say while we're on the air, Jordan, that you have a very loyal following, and I appreciate everybody out there that has reached out to us because of GrowCast. We've actually had a fellow grower in Maine say he was working in his garden and was listening to GrowCast and realized we were in Maine based on our area code from the phone number. So he reached out just to say hi, and I think that's really cool.
That is cool, man. Yeah, you GrowCast listeners really are the shit. I'm glad that they're checking out your product, man. I can't wait to move more units of that. Everyone needs to check that out. And homegrown journals as well. Anything else you want to fill us in on before we sign off here?
Yeah, I guess if you're across New England, we are now the New England representatives of Easy Trim, the harvesting solution people.
Oh, that's right.
So we're covering all of New England and a lot of the East Coast for sales and service of their products. So if you ever want to check out some Easy Trim products and you're in New England, give us a shout. Let us know. We're at green-harvestsolutions.com.
Fantastic. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. At GrowCast on Instagram, growcastpodcast.com. Find all of our affiliates, including Atlas Plant Trainer. And grab a couple coconuts while you're there. Everyone could use another one of those bad boys. Rob Smith, thank you so much for joining us, my friend.
As always, thanks for having me, Jordan.
All right, everybody. Be safe and grow smarter.
Take care, everybody.